Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. Great weekend of basketball. Great week. Sort of a great weekend of golf.
Yeah.
You're a Kepka fan. Big Monday show for you today. There could be a hiccup when it comes to KD and Kyrie teaming up. We'll tell you about that. The Warriors, they took a commanding lead over the Blazers. We got to start with last night's game in the East. Raptors taking on the Bucks in game three. All of the Raptors this time. Kawhi Leonard finally getting that help he's been hearing about all postseason long. Kawhi, though, leading the team to a double overtime win, scoring 36 points and a game high and a career high 52 minutes of play on a bad leg, which he brushed off after the game. 118-112 was your final. It was a tough night for Giannis Antetokounmpo. He had just 12 points on 5 of 16 shooting. He did have 23 boards, though, and his Bucks do still lead the series 2-1. See, I'll start with you, and let's start in Toronto. How impressive was Kawhi last night?
Well, very impressive. Not only the minutes that you talked about, but making key buckets. I think the most impressive thing of everything that he might have done besides being, because early in the game, he looked like he tweaked his leg a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, to play those types of minutes. But those minutes that he played on Giannis, to be able to take those minutes off of Serge Ibaka and Siakam, that they didn't have to play him. And it was a totally different style. He's undersized. The shortest guy that's probably guarded Giannis in this playoff in the first three rounds of it. And he gave Giannis some problems. He could anticipate where Giannis was going to go first, so he would get to that spot and then try to make Giannis either pick up the ball or spin back into him. And what he would do was he would try to get Giannis before, a lot like Andre Iguodala does, old school basketball players. As you bring the ball up to shoot it, that's where they try to defend you the hardest compared to defending you at the top of your jump. Very, very successful. And you can't stop Giannis without your teammates. So them being completely engaged of what's the game plan, we're going to help Kawhi when we have to, and we're not going to give Giannis anything easy. We don't mind if he goes to the free throw line. We're going to foul him. We're going to foul him hard. We're going to foul him often. Very, very successful. That's what kept Toronto in this game, and they were able to get enough offense at the end with Kawhi in that double overtime where he was probably the most productive offensively to be able to close him out. Very impressed with the way Kawhi played to be able to save their season in game number three.
Yeah, Kawhi was outstanding on both ends, much like he was the last time their season was on the line, game seven against the Philadelphia 76ers. And much like that game, this game had an importance greater than just this series. We've talked all season long about Toronto's ability to keep Kawhi Leonard after this year. We thought hitting that game-winning shot against the Sixers was an enormous step towards that. But we said the next day, but if in the next round, if they get swept, if they get drummed off the court, then a lot of those memories from round two will be darkened a bit by what's happened in round three.
What's the impact of the shot now?
Right. And if they lose last night, maybe they win game four, but the series is over.
Yes.
They are probably going to get swept. And it would have been despite Kawhi playing great. Kawhi played, all these things Chris talking about were true with 3 minutes left in the double overtime when Milwaukee had a one-point lead. Mm-hmm. They easily could have lost the game. Giannis obviously fouled out very early in that double overtime, which helped Toronto greatly. But Kawhi was, in a game that I think he's going up against right now, the best player currently playing, Kawhi was the best player on the court, on both ends of the court. And you mentioned he got a little more help from his starters, he did. But the bench from Toronto was the same bench it's been all series. Norman Powell stepped up. He stepped up bigger than he has throughout the series. And then who is there? There's Serge. It's been one of those two guys. Mm-hmm. Van Vliet was a non-factor again. He was particularly awful. So instead of being a six-man team, they were maybe a seven-man team last night. But it was mostly Kawhi Leonard, not just the 36 points, but what Chris talked about, his defense on Giannis and Chris Middleton as well. He was matched up on some, and Middleton struggled the entire game.
But wouldn't you say, though, maybe they didn't get everything they've had from their bench the way they had all season long? This was much more of a complete game from a complete team than we've seen from the Raptors, at least in the postseason. And look what it took for them to beat the Bucks. It took the 52 minutes of play from Kawhi Leonard on a leg that may or may not be affecting him moving forward. It took 36 points. It took everything they had from everyone they had, and then they just beat the Bucks. I mean, it feels like they've got a heavy weight on their shoulder if they want to duplicate this and do this again.
Well, Milwaukee's the best team in the NBA throughout the regular season. So how they would react when during the regular season, these teams have a method for which they're going to win. And part of the method for Toronto was they played well when Kawhi wasn't in the lineup. They also had a tremendous bench. Nick has talked about it, how much they miss OG. Appendectomies kept him out of all three playoff series. And their bench has not been good. 27 points in last night's game in a double overtime, which they needed them. Kyle Lowry fouls out. Powell fouls out. Like, they needed them. But they lost the bench scoring 2-1, though, because Milwaukee scores 50-something points. Yep. So it lets you know the bench didn't win this game. They did come in and play some very serviceable minutes that aren't in the stat sheet. But, man, they need an answer to Milwaukee's bench. Milwaukee, 54 points off the bench again. That's how Toronto, they're barely able to survive that.
Right. It goes to double overtime despite no Milwaukee starter having more than 16 points. And despite Giannis having the struggles that I know you want to get into.
Were you concerned about Giannis last night?
Well, I mean, listen, this was the worst offensive game he's played all year. One of the five worst offensive games he's played in the last 2 years. He's still, because he is such a versatile player, he puts his imprint on the game elsewhere. He gets a career high in rebounds. He was tremendous on the defensive end. But it wasn't just the 12 points. The 8 turnovers were enormous. Though,
yes.
And they are mostly live ball turnovers. They're what you're talking about. Kawhi stripping him or Giannis, who's a good ball handler for his size. But because he's damn near 7 feet tall, he still has a propensity to dribble a little too high. And he was getting, before he could get into his Euro step or get into his spin move, he was having the ball knocked away from him. I'm not concerned because I think Giannis will bounce back with an excellent game 4. He had an excellent game 2, even though I didn't even think that was his A game. But Giannis, this was the worst game he's played this postseason, and offensively, the worst game he's played all year.
Yeah, I have some concern, Jenna, because you don't expect a superstar, potentially the MVP, to play 44 minutes and only get 16 shots. Like, you're supposed to get more shots than that, especially on the road. I know last year we had conversations about Giannis in some of the road games. He disappeared. This year, he's been a little more consistent. But when you go on the road, you need your marquee player. You need the MVP of the league to be able to put some type of imprint on the game. No, not rebounding. No, not just defensively, but you need to be able to score the basketball.
Right.
They were struggling scoring the basketball, and that's why his total evolution, it's important. And that's why it's important for younger players. You need to be able to get your shot. And last night, Giannis could not get to his spot to produce the type of shots that would have led them to a victory.
All right, time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. All right, big night, like we said, for Kawhi Leonard. 36 points, 9 boards as the Raptors were able to force a series now by winning Game 3. Nick, put a grade on Kawhi's night.
I give him an A. The only reason he doesn't get an A-plus is if he hits that game winner in single overtime, I win my Milwaukee +3. He cost me that one. So he gets an A. No, he was great on both ends. He was spectacular. Best player on the court last night.
You got to give him an A-plus, nerd. Okay, come on. Just because you didn't get the extra credit homework.
Cost me some money,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's costing you money. He was great. He was really great, especially with the mental part of the game. He gets nicked early. I thought it was like a muscle cramp in his quad. Goes on to play the most minutes he's ever played in the basketball game, A+.
All right, take a break. Coming up, no KD, no problem for the Warriors. That is next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Back here on First Things First. We'll get to the Warriors in a second, but first, Raptors, Bucks, Kawhi, coast to coast. Nikola Mirotic thinks twice before contesting the dunk.
Man, they got away with one here. Kawhi double dribbled in transition. Yeah. Brogdon was the only one that was on it.
Right there.
He went to the referee and told him right after. He's like, look, man, he double dribbled.
Yeah. He picks up the ball. I didn't see it in real time, and it's right after, right before when that.
That's the highlight. That's the reason why he's got a hurt leg. He's jumping off two legs now.
Warriors Blazers from Saturday. Draymond Green gets in transition, finds Jordan Bell for the dunk.
Great play here. Jordan Bell redeems himself after missing an easy one earlier. Draymond staying in with him. That was one of the themes in the second half that led to their comeback.
Most teams would be very lucky and very happy to have one passer as good as Draymond or Steph. The Warriors, of course, have two, and it's been part of how great they've been the last couple weeks.
More Warriors. Quinn Cook with a nice move at the point. Finishes with the lay-in. Oh, got left hanging, Steph.
Let me see. Well, listen, you get this. Is that Zach Collins? That is Zach Collins. I mean, just rock-a-bye baby on him a little bit. Quinn Cook gets to the rim. You got no chance out there.
It's really nice. He brought the ball into his body like he was getting ready to shoot it, and then he moves his left hand and just puts him to sleep. Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's a nice little dribble move.
No one had an
issue
with Steve.
That's what Kawhi was trying to do.
With Steph Curry getting left hanging with the high five. Stresses me out.
Steph can be a little corny on the bench.
When you go for the high five, you get left hanging. Sticking with the Warriors Blazers now, Steph Curry, as mentioned, has been the star since KD went down. But it was Draymond Green's triple-double, which allowed the Warriors to take down the Blazers in Game 3, 110-99, your final. 20 points, 13 boards, 12 assists for Draymond, his seventh career playoff triple-double, third of this postseason, I believe all on the road, if I'm not mistaken. Series now all but over as the Warriors lead 3-0. All three games, mind you, without KD. Here's Steve Kerr after the win.
I don't even know what to say about Draymond. I mean, he was like a wrecking ball out there. He was just destroying everything in his path. The pace that he was generating was incredible, and it just seemed like he never got tired.
In terms of just his aggression on both ends of the floor, his decisiveness, like you said, there's not a lot of, you know, big guys that can stay in front of him full steam ahead and transition, and, you know, puts the defense on their heels. And then on top of that, he's making so many plays on the defensive end. So, you know, a lot's been said about his game as of late, and he's continued to take it up a notch.
When Kevin's not on the floor, I know I have to be more aggressive. And so whether that's attacking the basket, putting more pressure on defense, you know, I understand that. And I think it's very easy to just try to get these guys to make more and more shots when Kevin's not on the floor. But, you know, it can't put that much pressure on them. So I just try to take it up on myself to really push the pace, get the tempo to where we want it, and then still, you know, try to make plays for other guys as well.
Nick, this was not a lock for the Warriors by any stretch. They trailed by as many as 18 in this one. How are they able to win Game 3?
Man, it felt like the Blazers expected it and were waiting for it to happen in that third quarter, and it felt like the crowd was as well. This was the biggest game that's been played in the Moda Center. It had been played by the Blazers franchise in nearly 20 years. You have a 14-point halftime lead, and they came out waiting for the other shoe to drop, and Golden State obliged. Draymond was unbelievable. And no one on the Blazers could match his intensity, his speed, his ferocity up and down the court. No one seemed even interested in matching it, much less duplicating it or beating it. The Warriors were amazing defensively in the second half. After allowing 37 in the second quarter, they allowed 33 total in the second half. And they just imposed their will. And unlike game two in Oracle, when the Warriors hit them with an avalanche, the Blazers were able to punch back. And then they just melted away at the end of the game. The Blazers, it felt to me like they were resigned to their fate. Here comes the Warriors run. Draymond's running the fast break of point guard. Steph, Draymond pick and roll. What are we going to do? It was frustrating to watch if you were hoping that this series could be competitive at some point, because the Warriors are clearly better. Even without Kevin Durant, the Warriors are the heavy, heavy favorite. But to blow back-to-back big halftime leads in the exact same way and with your season on the line to show no resistance whatsoever, it was frustrating as a neutral observer. As a Blazers fan, I think you'd have been pulling your hair out.
The Warriors are a great basketball team. I didn't look at it the same way Nick did as far as Portland waiting for Golden State initiated. In the third quarter, they changed the pace of the game. And this is what Draymond Green is a great basketball player. And we should expect the team that still has three All-Stars, the team that has, and we got Isaiah Thomas coming later, a team that has the best backcourt in the history of the NBA, like, they're a great basketball team, even without Kevin Durant. So let's not forget that. Draymond Green took over, though, in the third quarter, because sometimes the Warriors, they do struggle in their half-court offense. So what does he do? He initiates the offense before the defense can get set up. So he can either push the pace because he rebounds and he gets the ball. He doesn't need anyone to outlet to him. And what it does is it allows the other role players to get easier shots. And if they don't get easier shots, Bell in the highlights and other guys that Draymond was finding, then the secondary break, Steph and Klay, you lose them. So this is just another way that the Warriors through the years have operated their offense. They don't need to call a play. Draymond, get it off the board, push it down the court, try to make something happen, and then that secondary break, you got two of the best shooters all time coming up, and typically one of those guys will get lost. So they either get a good offensive look at it through their role players, through Draymond running the offense, or Steph and Klay after that.
There's a good chance they'll be without Iggy. I think he's questionable with a sore Achilles. Are you worried about depth for this team, at least with the starters?
No,
without Boogie, KD, Iggy?
For the NBA Finals, sure. But for the rest of this series, no. I mean, they could lose tonight, but it doesn't. The Blazers had multiple opportunities to make this a series, and their offense has gone to die. Like, it's one thing for the Warriors, with Draymond pushing the pace like that, to score 57 in the second half. That's going to happen. To score 33 yourself, 13 in the third quarter, which was as big of a quarter as you've played all season, to not be able to adjust. What the Warriors are doing defensively is not complex. They are trapping Dame out near half court, which can present an advantage for the Blazers offense. If he makes the play, they have a 4-on-3 at least temporarily, or a 3-on-2 depending on where people are on the court. He's not making the play, and when he does make the play, he's not giving it to a guy like Draymond Green, who is a point forward, who can then make the next play themselves. So, no, I'm not worried about the Warriors for this series. If Iggy were going to miss time in the finals, I'd be worried, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm worried about it, Jenna, because ultimately, how many starters can you lose? So they lost three starters. All right, you can only go to the bullpen so much. So for me, just like Damian Lillard, in game number two, he's suffering right now from a torn rib cartilage.
Yep.
You know the reason why? He fell on the basketball. Kevon Looney fell right on top of him. But now you play another game. So every time, what I think he's missing here is every time you go out there, you got the opportunity to get hurt. Now we see the other series is at 2-1. Now they're shorthanded with Iguodala. They could be closing. If Iggy was healthy, I'd be like, man, they're going to close him out tonight. Like, it's a wrap. But now, how many more games? How many more extra minutes? What if Klay gets nicked? What if Steph gets nicked? Because now they have to guard the primary ball handlers. And Iguodala was taking that job away from them. And that's the hardest job to the Warriors defensively, to be able to guard Dame. And what Iggy does to him, he presents a lot of problems. So, yes, I am worried. They're down two starters. Now they're down a third starter. Who else can afford to get nicked? It was something I said last week. Like, this is not only about this series, but it's about those minutes that every guy is going to play. Now, the finals, there's a set date. So the Warriors want to be able to get this over with as soon as possible. I just think they have less chances of doing it tonight because Iguodala is their best perimeter defender.
Well, and maybe I am not taking Iggy's injury as seriously as you guys are. He had an MRI. It came back clean. I don't believe that if this were a game that the Warriors needed, I would assume Iguodala would play. We don't officially know if he's not going to play this evening. And the Blazers, to me, they have waved the white flag. They might win tonight. But they can't suffer an injury to Steph or Clay, Chris. I agree with you on that. But if they were, they had an opportunity to really put the pressure on Golden State, particularly if Andre Iguodala was not going to play. But what halftime lead do they need tonight to feel comfortable going into the third quarter?
So what if Portland gets the same lead they got in game number two and game number three? And without Iggy on the court, Golden State could be like, you know something? Man, we'll get to game number five. So now you got to play an extra game. I just know the wear and tear on each person from an energy standpoint, from a mental standpoint. Yes, they're in control of the series, but they're also down three starters. And I just believe it's very, very important for us to continue that. If Andre Iguodala, he's one of the great pros that we have. If he can't play, it's because he's forced off the court. All right, a former MVP of the finals, you want him on. He's been their best defender, and he's the reason why Damian Lillard has had a very poor series.
All right, Boogie Cousins, Kevin Durant, now maybe Iggy. We will see. Coming up, speaking of KD, why is Durant upset with Steve Kerr? That's next on First Things First. Got a full slate of baseball coming your way Saturday on Fox. Action kicks off at 7 Eastern with most of the country seeing the Red Sox battle the Astros. Check your local listings for the game in your area. Time now for Say What? Check out this police officer named Joshua Morris.
Step back.
Showing off his game at the park, showing no mercy to his opponent. But it isn't just play a game. Talks a little trash as well. Take a listen.
Let me say, this is an excellent young man, wonderful king, bright future. Let me just say that. But I hate when you beat somebody and then they point out their names.
No, but I'm him, though. I told you to play again, though.
But I played you.
You got beat you, right?
You beat me.
All right, okay. But if you want to play again, it's up for the
next.
Hit him with the step back. He gave the young man some time to come back into the frame on defense.
He didn't want none. The most impressive thing about this is not only the interaction, because typically between African-American and police officers, there is not that type of union. But this police officer, the average police officer is wearing about 20 pounds of gear.
Yeah.
20 pounds of gear with a step back and everything. Must be a very good athlete. As you can tell, he's played some basketball.
It's awesome.
Yeah, but young fella, get back in the frame. You're just going down for the rebound. There ain't nobody else on the court, man.
Yeah, they don't make young people like they used to.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is one of these damn millennials. He's too young to be millennial. Whatever
he don't
the new generation is.
All right, time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Raptors, Bucks, Game 3, Toronto finally showed up. Kawhi led the team to a double overtime win, scored 36 points in a career-high 52 minutes of play. 118-112 was your final. Chris Carter, what'd you make of Kawhi's night?
Oh, it was amazing. It was because I didn't know if he was going to be able to make it. You could see him cramp up early or grab his thigh. I thought the fact that the medical staff didn't come over initially, that was something very, very positive. But the mental toughness it takes to play these games, it's impressive. The steals late, the rebounds late, exploding to the hoop late in the game, very impressive. One of his most impressive games, I think he scored 10 30-point games this postseason.
This postseason is a 10 30-point game. And for the Raptors as a whole, the mental fortitude, it goes to overtime. Why? Because Pascal Siakam misses two free throws and then misses a really tough potential game winner. It goes to double overtime. Why? Because Kawhi misses a really tough potential game winner, but a shot we know he can hit, that little mid-range shot from the left elbow. When you're in a must-win game, you have two chances to win it. You blow them both or you don't come through on them both to then finish them off in the double overtime.
He dominated the double overtime.
Oh, absolutely. Especially once Giannis was off the court, Kawhi had a little more freedom. He was exceptional and obviously an enormous win that keeps the Raptors' season alive.
All right, to the Western Conference Finals now. Portland struggling to get into this series with the Warriors, who lead 3-0. Dame Lillard confirmed he is dealing with a separated rib. He stressed, quote, "I don't think it's something that's affecting my game." CC, what do you make of this?
I think it's affecting this game because the thing about with them trapping them, the physical contact, they're putting a lot of height, a lot of size on top of them, and now the physicality of every time you got bumped, that torn cartilage in your rib, it makes it totally uncomfortable. And that's one of the spots that it's really hard to, like, take a pill or to get a shot because it's such an acute area. You basically have to play through the pain. So, yes, this is a real injury, but a real athlete's not going to make a mistake and make excuses like Dame did.
Well, and so, listen, I think that this is another example, though, of where guys, if guys get injured and they can't play, we don't hold that against them. But if guys get injured and play through it and play poorly, we all of a sudden, Dame, we had been elevating him, and then he has a poor Western Conference Finals, and then we're like, oh, did we elevate him too early? I think he'd be struggling to a degree even without the injury. But as you can see in that highlight, they're up 11 in Oracle the moment he gets hurt, the early second half of game two. He's played poorly, mm-hmm. and they've played poorly since then, and it's obviously been a part of that.
All right, let's move on. Talk some Anthony Davis now. Pelicans owner Gail Benson dismissed a report that she would trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers, quote, over her dead body. Nick, the door's still open for AD to team up with LeBron?
I've been pretty consistent in this, and what I heard when David Griffin took the job was he was told unequivocally, if you end up trading Anthony Davis, obviously they'd love to keep him, you are able to make whatever you deem the best trade available. Now, the Lakers are going to get no favors, and the Lakers are going to have to far outshoot whatever the next best offer is. But I thought it was odd, the original report, that Gail Benson would have said that because it would have gone against what she had communicated to David Griffin as far as what I was told. So, yeah, I buy that Gail is saying she did not say the over my dead body line.
Yeah, I think that was during this season. Trade him to the Lakers over my dead body this season.
Right.
Now with David Griffin, you can't handicap him. You can't say, hey, listen, that this team's not available, so now you're not going to get the best deal. I believe he doesn't take that. If she voices that to him, you can see with him hiring other people. Trajan Langdon, he brings him over as the general manager from the Brooklyn Nets to be able to help out basketball operations. I think they're on the right track, and I believe the Lakers are one of many suitors, but the best deal will be had for the Pelicans.
All right, finally, talk some football now. Cowboys have been hinting all offseason long at who they want to pay and when. Ezekiel Elliott's on that list, and while he might be due for a payday, he doesn't seem concerned about that at the moment. After winning the division title two of the last three seasons, Zeke thinks the Cowboys can continue that success this upcoming fall. Can't stop, won't stop. Here's Zeke.
I'm just excited about the group of guys we have. I'm excited about the talent we have on this team, and then I'm excited about that leadership group we have. So, I mean, I think we have a lot of the right pieces, and I think we have a lot of promise for this season.
All right, CC, let's look at the season ahead. Is this Cowboys team right now set up to take another step forward?
I'm going to address the offensive side because Zeke, that typically is an offensive player, that's what he's talking about. And I believe they will be better. Dak with more experience than he's ever had. And if you look at the way he played, sample size with Amari Cooper, that would have to be very, very encouraging. Randall Cobb is your slot receiver. I know he's better than previously what they had. Travis Frederick, if he's able to get back and be 75 to 80% of the player that he was, then he's better than what they had. And he's the captain of that offensive line. So offensively, I think the Cowboys will be better this year. They'll be more explosive. They got more speed on the field. So, yes, I would see some improvement from an offensive standpoint. And another year of playing together, Zeke, Dak, that offensive line, overall gelling and everything. I'm concerned about the play calling. I don't know what their theme, what their philosophy is going to be. When they get in third and long, what's their philosophy going to be? When they're in third and short, what's their philosophy? How are they going to attack? So for me, the question marks are not about the personnel. The question marks are about the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator. These guys have limited experience in the NFL. So my eyes will be on them and what position they're putting these players in as they start the season.
They are well positioned to be better, if for no other reason than Dak going into year four, Zeke still being Zeke, having Amari and the additions Chris said of Randall Cobb and the de facto addition of Travis Frederick. But when it comes to play calling, when it comes to their offense, if they're going to get better, there is one very specific area they must improve. Warren Sharp laid this out on Friday, actually. The Cowboys were last or dead last in the NFL by almost any metric on effectiveness inside the 10-yard line and inside the 5-yard line. Their red zone, gold zone offense, their ability to have successful plays, it's why they were kicking what seemed like a ridiculous amount of 21-yard field goals and 23-yard field goals because they'd get down in the scoring zone and not be able to get six. They instead had to settle for three. That's really inexplicable when you have a running back like Ezekiel Elliott and you have a quarterback that can be a bit of a dual threat like Dak Prescott. Typically, teams like that that have a reliable running game and a quarterback that's a threat with their legs are even more deadly in the red zone. It might have been because they didn't have a reliable red zone receiver. They didn't have a tight end option all throughout the year until week 17. They seemingly all of a sudden had a tight end pop in that game against the Giants. But that, if the Cowboys do everything else the same, but just improve on turning those threes into sixes when you are right at the mouth of the goal line, that will instantly make their offense much better. And that is, if that's what we're focused on here. Now, to improve actually as far as the season goes, that means you make a conference championship game because they got to the second round again last season, second time in three seasons with Dak and Zeke. They've done that. So that's a different discussion. But can the team be better? Sure, it starts with effectiveness inside the 5 and the 10.
Yeah, red zone offense can be improved in a number of different ways. Number one way to improve your red zone offense is to not get in the red zone. One thing we tried to do when we got Randy Moss, we were a great red zone team because I was always a great red zone wide receiver. But we tried to score outside the red zone. We increased our red zone from the 25 to the 40. So once we got to the 40-yard line, we considered that to be the red zone. And we started targeting more shots down the field because most teams at that point, they are not defending the end zone. They're defending the chains, trying to keep you from getting a first down. The second way is red zone's about number count and I'm better than you. Brian Billick used to tell me this, Chris, my guy's better than their guy. That's why we'll be better in the red zone. We'll throw it to you and give you a couple different opportunities. And the reason why they're not good in the red zone, because their quarterback does run and their running back they're relying on, defense are giving them eight guys in the box. So it's a number count. You got seven guys to block. I'm sending eight guys. So even if your quarterback decides to run, I got an extra guy. So they have to be a little more creative from a coaching staff. And Amari Cooper has got to be a red zone threat. That's the way they can instantly improve the red zone offense.
All right, good stuff there. Let's get back to the NBA now. Kevin Durant has been on the sideline the last four games as his team hasn't missed a beat. They haven't lost since the injury. All signs continue to point to KD leaving Golden State after the season. Pick your reason why, but according to reports, part of Durant's issue with the Warriors is the prodding from Steve Kerr and the feeling that no matter what he does, it will always be Steph Curry's team. Nick, is there any scenario at this point whereby Kevin Durant stays with the Golden State Warriors?
Listen, I think the reason that everyone's been couching the KD stuff is KD is going to go to New York, but no one is reporting officially. People are just saying it's what everyone's hearing. It's what everyone's talking about at the combine. It's what everyone's been talking about all year long is because people do change their mind, and KD has shown himself to be a little mercurial. As of right now, everything is still in place for it. What could happen? I would argue that if he were to miss the rest of the playoffs and they were to get crushed in the NBA Finals by Milwaukee, then maybe he has people say to him, hey, man, you don't have to leave to be validated. They won two titles. The year before you got there, they lost in the finals. The 2 years you played, they won in nine games, 8-1, and then they lost without you. But even that scenario, I think he's still a heavy favorite to go to New York. I think Kevin Durant understands that the only mountain left to climb is one that Golden State does not present. And while they seem to all be on the same page on the court, he and Draymond still have that lingering issue. He and Steve Kerr, I understand why if I'm Kevin Durant, I would feel like, man, what do I have to do to get favorite son status? And the reality is, from the players, the coach, or the fans, he will never be Stephen Curry. Except he will never have the opportunity to build it the way Stephen Curry did. So I think it is, you need to thread a lot of needles to create a scenario where it makes sense for Kevin Durant to stay, given how everything's been going. If he's missed the rest of the postseason and the Bucks beat him in five, then maybe it opens the door. But I don't even think that likely would tilt the scales in the favor of him.
I think them losing in the finals actually invites Kevin to leave more because it proves a point. It validates his his impact on the organization. Last time you guys lost, what happened? Oh, I wasn't here. So we lose again. Well, what happened? Oh, I wasn't here again. But the two times I was healthy, we won championships. So I believe that there's some validation in them struggling without him. But what they're doing on the court, as far as Draymond, you talked about the issue that him and Draymond have. The issue is not a conflict of a personality. It's a skill set. Kevin Durant is a straight knockdown offensive killer. You give him the ball, two or three dribbles, he can get you a bucket. Draymond Green is a Swiss Army knife. What do you need? You need a can opener, you need a small knife, you need a 6-inch blade. Like, he can do all those things that no one on the Warriors. And it all got started because Draymond would not pass the ball up to KD. KD was clapping for the ball, saying, give me the ball. And Draymond was pushing the ball. Everything people have been praising Draymond through this whole playoff, yes, especially since Portland, that's his deal.
Right.
That's his game. Coach Izzo, I got a text from Coach Izzo.
This is the play right here, buddy.
And he told me, watch Draymond Green play his best basketball that KD's hurt. When KD wants the basketball, now Draymond, he was about 20 pounds heavier, not playing the type of basketball. So, yes, KD was, give me the basketball, but Draymond, that's Draymond Green. He's an all-star. He's one of the best players that we've ever seen play this game. And KD's like, don't disrespect me, because that's what Draymond took it as. And we were doing this long before you were here, and we'll be doing this long after. So that right there, if there is a conflict, it's about style. Draymond talked about it after the game. It's harder for me. I have to sacrifice more with KD here because there's things I could do that now I can't do because he's on the court.
What about the last three games specifically in this Blazers series? How much do you think that has affected? Because he did answer an Instagram person who wrote in something about how he's dealing with this, and there's a lot of pressure on KD.
I think that this is, for Kevin, this is tough, and I understand why it would be. Everyone was getting ready to crown him the best basketball player alive, and then he gets hurt. It's not his fault he gets hurt, but he gets hurt. And then the team hadn't lost since then. They win they're tied against Houston. They go on to win that game. They win game six. They're up 3-0 in this series. I think it's from the 8-game stretch that KD had after they blew the 31-point lead and he said, I'm Kevin Durant, that up until the game he got hurt. In those 8 games, he averaged 39-5-5. On 50-40-90. It's as well as you possibly can play. And the team was 5-3. So he's playing at this super high level. And the team's winning, but they're 5-3. KD goes down. They're 4-0 since then. And the other thing we're seeing, we've seen a bunch of big threes in the NBA before. But this one, the Steph, Clay, Draymond one, the thing, Jonathan Jarks pointed this out in an article this week, and it's a really smart point. There's no redundancy. They all fill in the blanks for the other person. Like, so nobody has to take a back seat because they are all strengths where the other guy's weak. So Steph needs a long guard to come help him. That's what Clay does. Clay isn't great with the ball in his hands. Well, Draymond and Steph can do that. Draymond adds some toughness and some playmaking. So there's an element of KG, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, which it was all three guys do something very specific and unique, so they play off each other brilliantly. Nobody in that big three is asked to take the Chris Bosh role, the Kevin Love role.
Right.
When it becomes KD, Steph, Clay, Draymond is immediately asked,
of course.
And one of those three guys also does, because KD is such a special talent. So, yeah, I think that plays into this. Absolutely.
It plays into it, but I believe a lot of it can be resolved by the coach. Because if KD, when he was starting and say Steph was out, no one ever empowered Draymond to play the way he's playing with KD on the court. Now, we can't just think that, oh, KD's on the court, they're a worse basketball team. No, they're not. Their style is totally different. But I guarantee you, if Draymond played the same way with KD on the court, if they didn't have Clay or Steph, they would be a similar basketball team. But it forces Draymond to play a different style. It's affected the team.
All right, and he's been playing as good as ever, Draymond. All right, coming up, can Kawhi take the Raptors all the way to the finals? Head on First Things First. First Things First, Basketball Hall of Fame, Isaiah Thomas is here. Hey,
What's
Zeke.
Up, good to see you.
Welcome back. Great to have you.
Good seeing you, man. Did you grow?
Because you know what? Let's do this.
You
Zeke,
go, bro.
Zeke, stand up.
Please.
Sit down. Stand up for a moment.
Zeke, hold on. I swear.
Either
I,
Zeke's 5'8".
I got to listen to him. I got to listen to him.
Gay, gay.
Oh, don't do it. Okay. Oh, I'm scared. No, okay.
No, thank you. That's cussing.
I ain't moving.
Okay, thank you.
Chris Carter and Jenna Wolf been trying to spread this rumor that I'm a...
Great to see you.
That I'm 5'8". And if I am, then Zeke's been overselling his height by about 6 inches.
Well, I've been overselling it by 6, definitely by 2, maybe. Right.
Okay, you know, so you're a 6-footer. Maybe just under?
No,
With a slightly thicker resume than yours. But that's okay.
But I don't know why we fight for that extra inch on the resume. It's like, you know.
Yep.
You know.
Sit down, man. Okay. All right. When you were on radio, they thought you were 6'8". Now they know.
Isaiah Thomas.
And a quarter, the doctor said.
It is the gift that keeps on giving to sports shows across America, the Lakers, and all their daily news. According to reports, the Lakers will not replace Magic Johnson with a new president of basketball operations, leaving Rob Pelinka in charge of the franchise, of trying to pitch free agents, of trying to trade for Anthony Davis, of trying to win games and make the playoffs, and about 1,400 other things. Zeke, how important is this role, president of basketball operations, and why wouldn't the Lakers want to fill it?
It's an extremely important role in all basketball organizations. And I think it's extremely important for the Lakers also, because this is the first time that I can remember since I've been in the NBA or been around basketball where the Lakers have not had a former player or a Laker in their organization running things or managing things. Mm. So this is a new territory that we're entering into for the Lakers and for a lot of organizations. Most organizations in the NBA has always had some former player within their management team. This is the first time where I've seen a couple of organizations now, they don't have a former player and their management team moving forward. And they say participation and observation is the best form of education. And what we have now in a lot of organizations is they've gone strictly towards observation and they've totally discounted the participation in the sport. So if you've limited yourself from a total educational background in terms of advice, in terms of critique, in terms of knowledge.
The closest thing they have to a former Laker in a position of power is Kurt Rambis, who seems to be getting his power via the proximity to his wife, Linda. Linda, who's one of Jeannie Buss's closest advisors. But the other reason for me, Isaiah, that this is so baffling is they didn't fire Magic Johnson. They didn't look at it and say, you know what, we have redundancy. We think Pelinka can take on both roles. This was a job that was filled that Magic, with no warning, impromptu, stepped away from. So you thought it was important enough to hire Magic and Pelinka. You thought it was important enough to be taken aback when Magic walked away, and now you don't need it. So now Magic, I assume, was doing something during the day. Magic was, there was some level of work that he was doing.
Unless Pelinka convinced them that he could do.
Well, he must have. But to me, you can see by them not hiring someone for this job and who they hired as the head coach, Frank Vogel, who nobody thought was about to get another head coaching job this quickly, especially at, it looked bad what happened with him in Orlando. It looked even worse once you saw Orlando this year. The reason you hire that coach is because that coach cedes power to whom? To Pelinka. So Pelinka gets some of the power a coach would have, all the power Magic Johnson had, and now becomes the most powerful voice in the organization that isn't a member of the Buss family.
And this is where I think the NBA and our league has truly failed LeBron James. Because every place LeBron James has gone, they've always given him either a first-year coach or someone that they were experimenting with. And they always took unnecessary chances because you had LeBron James. LeBron James has never had the benefit of, in my opinion, Hall of Fame coaches. He had a Hall of Fame front office with Pat Riley in Miami. However, you know, they gave him a rookie coach to get started off with.
There were some issues.
They lost, but then they regrouped. But at the same time, he's never had the benefit of, you know, the greatest coaches ever. And now you're in this organization now with the Lakers where historically they've always been known for their front office, you know, expertise, so forth and so on. Now, they've had some bad luck and bad years, but LeBron James now coming into this situation is basically dealing with, you know,
a rookie front office. Yeah.
And a rookie on all fronts, because now if Rob is going to be the GM and the president, he's never been the president of a basketball organization, which is a lot of responsibility. Being a GM is a big responsibility, but when you're president and GM, that's a big bucket of water to drink.
As far as the free agents out there, we know that this is a much anticipated group coming. KD potentially being free, Kawhi, we talked about Kyrie Irving and a bunch of others, Jimmy Butler. But I want to go back to something, because I think that you are one of the rare people that can really comment on this. Last year, the NBA and the Lakers, they tried to help LeBron. Magic waiting out in front of his house now. Yep. Now, no one knows Magic better than you, and no one has been through the basketball experiences that you talk about mirrored with Magic. What the hell happened to Magic Johnson? And if I'm a free agent, why would you join the Lakers now where their greatest player quit and all the other chaos surrounding this team?
So two things, and I'm just speculating here. Okay, I have no inside knowledge, just my observation from the outside. You get the title as president of basketball operations. And as president of basketball operations, you get to implement your vision. Not only do you get to implement your vision, but you also get to bring in managers and coaches and people that you think can implement your vision. I think Magic found out later on in the process that
didn't read the details.
Yeah, that I'm the president only in name only, because when it came time to
potentially fire the coach, potentially maybe even look at moving Rob Pelinka.
Yeah, then it seems like okay, you don't have full authority or autonomy to make those moves. Now again, I'm just speculating because I don't know. But if you're given the title of president, then you get to make the moves and act as president. And it doesn't seem like that was the case in Los Angeles.
A lot of this gets fixed if they get one of these star free agents. Maybe not fixed, but people don't care as much. If you get an all-star caliber player to play alongside LeBron James, a lot of the mayhem of this offseason seems like secondary details. How much do you think this offseason has hurt their ability to get one of those star free agents?
Well, and when you talk about star free agents, right, I'm only talking about the top tier. I'm only talking about the best of the best. People who can come in and be transitional and transformational.
KD, Kawhi, Kyrie.
KD
and Kawhi.
Those are the top two, right? Everybody else is going to fill in and be pieces with.
Okay.
But these are the two guys. Now, if you're sitting there with Magic and LeBron, you got some conversation. Now, and Chris, you know this as a Hall of Fame player, Hall of Fame career. There are different levels of this. So you saying, okay, I'm getting ready to put my legacy in your hands. And if I'm going to put my legacy in your hands, then it's got to be somebody that's been in the room before.
That has a legacy themselves.
Yes. Thank you. But you can't walk through that door and talk to the greatest players in the games with the greatest minds in the game and the greatest positions in the game, and you come in with some lightweights talking about we can do this. Don't happen.
Very interesting.
Said something there.
Right. All right, Isaiah, we'll see you a little bit later in the show. Coming up, should teams be cautious before locking up Kyrie long term? We'll tell you why we're asking ahead on First.
Isaiah, step aside for a moment. Let me walk you off, Isaiah. Let me
go. When things go south, you have to let people be who they are, because there's no changing that. Like Draymond, he's just loud and demonstrative, and when he's in a room, you're gonna know he's in the room. And we need that. You know, we need that fire when we're out there on the court. Klay is kind of just in his own world all the time, and that's what makes him special, because nothing really gets to him. And so he's just Mr. Consistent for us. And then Kay is just a basketball savant. Everything he talks about, he's reading about, he's thinking about, is about the game. He's so good at what he does, and he always is trying to get better. It makes you uncomfortable to think like there's another level for this guy, and he's trying to find it. Like, we're all so completely different. We know we're human at our core, and there's stuff that's gonna bother us, whether it's justified or not. And we just gotta work through that stuff. And it takes time. Nothing's ever as easy as it sounds in terms of, you know, rallying the troops and recentering ourselves.
That was a clip from Stephen vs. The Game, which is now streaming on Facebook. The director, Gautam Chopra, joins us now. Thanks so much for joining. But the timing couldn't be better on this project. I mean, you really lucked into the timing on this.
It's like writing itself,
right?
You know, in real
time.
Yeah.
So you've worked with so many iconic athletes. You've worked with Kobe and LeBron and obviously Tom Brady. Tell me what makes Steph Curry different.
Man, you know, it's a question I keep getting. And the thing about Steph is he's the real deal. Like, everything you've kind of heard about him in terms of his humility and his grace and his character, it's real. Like, you get behind that curtain and you see that, you know, he's just a genuine guy who's really team first, you know. And, you know, I think the other thing is just like now having spent almost a year working on this project and really getting to know him and his family, you get, I mean, it's unbelievable what you see on the court and behind. You would think there's like this, you know, this really defined discipline process. It's kind of chaos. I mean, he's got three little kids. He's got a wife who's having her own explosive moment in terms of her career. And yeah, it's just like there's constant action. And yet you get to the floor and this guy is just so zen and balanced.
Right.
And like I said, team first.
I know most of these projects you don't come up with what's going to be the message. But Tom versus Time, it's fairly simple as far as what we're dealing with. Also, you have the Patriots, Belichick. How long will he allow Tom to play? So there was some conflict there.
Yeah.
Now, as you try to move on, see, I don't see the conflict in Steph. So what is the storyline absent of I'm following around one of the greatest basketball players ever?
Yeah, well, so there's a sports conflict, right? Like, it's probably the defining organization of its era in terms of the NBA. So can they win 4 in 5 years? Can they win their third straight? How are they going to, you know, free agency, just all the different things that are going on that team. I mean, there's just a natural conflict of like watching a sports story unfurl. But then, yeah, I mean, to your point, and I joke with Steph all the time, is like you're always looking, you know, as a storyteller for conflict in your character, tension. He is like the most sort of balanced zen guy, but then that, you know, it's like you lean right into that. It's like, okay, well, can I unpack this? Can I sort of decode this and figure out like what is the source of all of this success? And in Steph's case, which we didn't really do with Tom, it's like you really can go into the backstory. You can look at the genesis over time. You can talk about, you know, Dell and Sonny Curry, Seth Curry, and just like this thing that's emerged over, you know, 30 years at this point. And in their case has kind of all been documented because they filmed a lot of it.
One of the first words you used to describe Steph was humility. And you're a lot of people who have spent time around him, not just watch him from far, spend time around him, describe him as humble or says he has great humility. On the court, he's about as braggadocious as any player we have. Yeah. But people that know him say, off the court, he has almost none of the superstar diva frills that we associate with a lot of athletes of his stature. When you talk with him versus when you watch him, can you draw that dichotomy for me and explain kind of who he is that we're not always seeing?
Well, so I think a lot of people have heard him talk about his faith, and I think his faith is very real in his life, and I think his humility off of the court stems from that. I mean, he's humble. He's also grown up around this kind of stardom. You know, he grew up in an NBA family, so I think he's very comfortable with that fame, and it doesn't really nothing really rattles him. Yeah, on the court, he's one of the greatest players of all time. In my opinion, he's the greatest shooter of all time. He knows that. I mean, he has that bravado. You saw it the other, you know, what was it, in against the Rockets a week ago or so. Like, 0 points in the first half. It didn't shake his confidence at all. He has so much confidence in himself. And I think that's where that bravado on the court stems from.
In reading some of the buildup to this series, you mentioned that Steph feels this urgency to win with this iteration of the Golden State Warriors before free agency is upon us, before the team breaks up. How much does that weigh on him? Because we talk so much about Draymond, what he wants, and KD. You don't really hear so much about that from Steph Curry.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much it weighs on him, but I think, you know, when you get to a certain level, I saw this certainly with Tom, or elite athletes in general, LeBron, Kobe, et cetera, you're always looking for that edge. You're always looking for that thing to motivate you. And across an 82-game season, you need that. So I think it's actually become a sort, like, they don't know. Uncertainty. I mean, every day it's changing. You guys talk about it. Who knows?
That's why we have a show, basically.
So I don't think anybody knows, including the people on that team. And so I think that, like, they use that as, like, there's an hourglass here. What we do know is what we have right now, where we are. And that becomes the motivation to, you know, not let it slip away.
But actually, there not being an answer is an answer. Yeah. For these guys, at this point in their career, for him not to say, yes, I am going to continue here in Golden State, that is the answer that most people are obviously looking at. And all the other stories, we talked about the conflict, but the other stories, they didn't have the superstar. Tom Brady, they got Gronk. They got Belichick. They were just a little part of the story. How do you mix in with the focus being Steph? But I could argue that KD is a bigger superstar. Draymond has a big personality. Now, Klay blends in because he's his own self and everything. But that makes this story very, very different than the other stories also.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, it's the Beatles. It's like, you know, how do you keep this together? And in one of our interviews with Steve Kerr, he talks about maintaining greatness is way harder than attaining greatness. You know, when it's out there and you're just sort of relentlessly chasing, you've never tasted it before, it's one thing. But trying to keep this sort of alchemy, you know, in balance is tough, and different personalities. I mean, I think he said in one of his quotes also, he said, you know, 90% of my job is off the court and just managing personalities. This is, again, where guys like, you know, Steph are really good. I'd say that's probably his greatest contribution and gift to his team, is like his persona and his ability to sort of navigate these dominant personalities like Draymond, KD, et cetera, on his team, because that's the most fragile piece, you know? And you know, as a player, it's not like, at that level, like, there's so much talent. It's like, how do you manage, like, the chemistry and just all the emotions, especially across, you know, how long is the NBA season? Like, it's 5-6 months.
Right, yeah. Plus the playoffs. What do you make of the kinship between he and Draymond? We're obviously, since KD went down, seeing them on the court immediately go back to the pre-KD days of, while we talked about them as the Splash Brothers, Steph and Klay, the two most important guys were always Steph and Draymond. That hive mind they have on the court and their relationship off the court, what can you tell us about that?
I mean, it's great. And I've gotten to know, you know, outside of Steph, I'd say Draymond's the guy I know next best on that team. And it's such a different personality from Steph. It's almost, but they complement each other. And I think, you know, Mark Thompson described them as Gronk and Brady, to use another sort of, they're different personalities, but that chemistry is pretty amazing. And I think it goes back to that. As soon as KD went down, everyone, myself included, was like, oh man, like, what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
This could be a real disaster. But I think they look at that as a challenge. It has nothing to do with KD. I think they love him. They want him to come back. They're a better team with him. But that doubt that everybody throws their way, it helps fuel. And you're seeing those two guys in particular just rise to the occasion.
So much of Tom versus Time was Tom reflecting on his career. With Steph Curry very much in the thick of his career right now, do you get a sense that he understands what kind of impact he has and has had on the game and probably will have on the game?
Yeah, I think he's aware of it. I think, you know, because, again, there's so much chatter all the time. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he spends a lot of time. I mean, he's different. He's at a different place in his career. He's a different place in his life. You know, he doesn't. I remember earlier in the season, just in one of those conversations at a dinner table, we were talking about top 5, top 10 players of all times. And, you know, he did his, and it was like a lot of the same people. And he did put LeBron in that list. And I asked him, like, where do you place yourself? And it's not only did he not have an answer, it was like, literally, he was like, I don't think that way yet. You know, like, I will eventually, but, you know, right now I'm not there because I'm right in the middle of it. I still have a lot of hunger, you know, for that next chip.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.